Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. The United Nations is calling for a complete end to female genital cutting, also known as female genital mutilation, FGM. Victims and medical experts say the harmful practice leaves women and girls with short and long-term physical and psychological damage. Get this, the UN's children's agency, UNICEF, says more than 200 million girls and women globally have suffered genital mutilation, far higher than previously estimated. The ancient ritual practiced in some countries in Africa, Asia, and the Middle East usually involves the partial or total removal of a girl's external genitalia. We will discuss this topic on today's show. Joining us via phone from Centerville, Virginia, outside Washington, D.C., is Angela Peabody, president and founder of the Global Women Peace Foundation. Ms. Peabody, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you with us. Also joining us via phone from Washington, D.C. is Frances Cole. She's an advocate against FGM and has a personal story to share with us today. Ms. Cole, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
We appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today on this very sensitive and controversial topic I have today, I must say. Now, let me remind our listeners, if you would like to participate in the program with your question or comment, you can call 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. You can ask your international operator to reverse the charges. You can also email us your thoughts at healthchat@voanews.com or post them on Facebook. As you do, and it's facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. We will discuss this topic, FGM, in a moment, but first, take a listen to this latest report.
As a child, Anne-Marie Kalkner was forced to undergo female genital mutilation, or FGM, which some people refer to as female circumcision. The traditional practice removes some or all parts of the external female genitalia. It's seen by some as a rite of passage for girls and a way to make a girl more appealing to a husband. Kalkner says the violation was so severe it prompted her to form her own non-governmental organization called the National Movement for Emancipation and Progress, or NAMEP. The NGO works with local communities to educate them about the dangerous effects of FGM, such as health complications. On Saturday, local leaders and residents of a community in the western part of Freetown were there to listen. Chief Pa Fode Conte has been to several of NAMEP's discussions. He says although FGM is a traditional practice, he understands how harmful it can be to girls. He's now talking more to men about it. He says changing an entire mindset will take time.
Some will say yes, some will say no, you see. But as time goes, I believe all of them will know, say yes, this is a good idea for us.
Kalkner agrees.
But we will not give up because to any battle, there must be a challenge. There must be confrontation.
The Sowies are the women who perform the cutting, and many see it as a business. Chief Kadiatu Ansu Khan is a Sowie. She understands the concerns of NAMEP, but financial challenges remain.
Today we get our own livelihood for manage we serve your own life.
Speaking in her native Creole dialect, she says many people depend on the practice of FGM for their livelihood and that it's helped them earn a good income. NAMEP works with Sowies to help them learn other life skills such as tailoring. And international NGOs like the United Nations Children Fund are also working to end FGM along with the local government. Sandra Latouf is UNICEF's deputy representative in Sierra Leone. She says that during the Ebola crisis, the government banned the tradition due to the issue of touching. The virus is transmitted through direct contact with bodily fluids. This led to a decrease in the practice.
For the time being, the ban shows some fact, and the fact is that we can change behavior. And this is where we want really to work with the community, with the SOA, with all the leaders.
She adds that ending FGM is included in the Sustainable Development Goals created by the United Nations to make progress in such areas as climate change and gender equality. Nina DeVries for VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Again, ladies, thank you so much for joining us. Let me have your reaction to this report we heard, Ms. Peabody. One of the things that was said at the very last part of the program of the report is the fact that FGM has been included in the Sustainable Development Goals. How do you feel about that? How much impact do you think this will have in your work as someone who is really fighting to end this practice?
I think that, first of all, have the economic side of it, where the woman addressed that it's their livelihood. Well, all the government needs to do in Sierra Leone and other countries like Liberia and Sierra Leone is to find ways to replace their livelihood, because there are different ways that they can make a living rather than inflicting pain and possibly death on little girls. So I think that this is really, it's really disheartening to hear that and to hear what they're talking about, because it's not, I don't think that is the solution at all.
Now, Ms. Cole, as someone who has undergone this practice, what is your reaction? Let's talk about the economic aspect of it. From a victim's perspective, what can you say?
I have the same reaction Ms. Angela had. Just listening to that woman talk about it being their livelihood got me so furious. I can't even see it. I'm just standing up, pacing up and down in my bedroom. Mm. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. The government is not responsible for providing jobs for those women. They can go out there and make jobs for themselves. Like I wrote in my book, this is a money-making industry. When we had the Ebola outbreak in Sierra Leone, they found other ways of supporting their families so they can go back and find ways of supporting their families. When parents come to the realization that what they're doing, it's inflicting harm on their daughters and not really preparing them for marriage, because recently a man from my country posted on Facebook that he would rather be with a woman who has a clitoris than a woman who doesn't. So the thing that it's about a rite of passage from childhood into womanhood, even the men do not want a girl who's been through that. So my reaction to what that Soe just said is, I'm just so furious right now. If only they knew what they're doing to us, you know, but I'm sure where they're coming from is, oh, it happened to me and I'm fine. So if I do it to somebody else, to another, you know, to little girls, they should be fine too. But I know that deep down, if we sit down and talk to these women, they would tell you that they are not fine either. Mm-hmm. But like she said, it's a means of making money. And until the parents come to realization that they're doing more harm than good, they will stop taking their kids to these women, and these women will in turn find other ways of supporting their families.
So how do we even, where do we start in this process? Because we're talking about change of behavior, right? And this is deeply entrenched in some communities. Where do you start the process, Ms. Peabody? What have you done in your case with the Global Women Peace Foundation?
Information. Making information available and education. I've preached that so many times, and I continue to stick with it. You have to inform the people. Those women, like Francis said, those women who are making a living from it, they need to change. They need to be taught to change their behavior toward FGM. And I have read several articles where former excisers came forward and said, I did it from the time I was 25 years old, and now I'm 60 years old. I performed FGM on little girls, and sometimes they did at up to 100 girls a day. But when they found out the real truth behind FGM, that it is dangerous, the dangers of it, they decided to abandon their practice and do something else. So like Francis said, they can find a way. During the Ebola crisis in Sierra Leone, Guinea, and Liberia, they found ways to make a living and for their livelihood while the Ebola crisis caused them to ban it in those countries. So definitely they can find a way to make a living other than FGM. So I think if we just continue to inform the people and tell them about the health risks and educate them, I truly believe that we will be on the road to ending this thing worldwide.
And Ms. Cole, if I may ask you, could you share your experience? At what age you went through this and how it happens? Because we've seen cases where there are girls who are really looking forward to it because of some of the things that are being told to them. They think it's something glamorous, or maybe not glamorous, but at least it's something that when they go through, they will be respected, they will earn respect. And sometimes the mothers take care of this, and this. I've seen cases where fathers didn't even know about it. If you don't mind sharing, and if it is in any ways any uncomfortable for you, you don't have to share it.
Oh, no. I am really never ashamed to talk about my experience. It happened when I was 11 years old, and my older sister, Matilda, she's still in Freetown. She was 13. My mom is Creole. They don't practice. They don't go through female genital mutilation, what we call the Bondo Society back home. But it was my stepmother's idea, and she talked my father into having us go through it. All we were told that it's like, we were going to be made into women. And I was just happy because they told us that at the end, we're going to get gifts. So, yes, you're right. At the end, they tell you that it's this glamorous society. And when you go through it, you become respected. And they help you, they teach you ways on how to become a woman. My question, I was 11. I wasn't even finished being a child, even though my childhood was traumatized from age 6. I was sexually molested, I've been raped and all that stuff. But yeah, that's what they tell you. When you go through it, you become a woman, everybody will respect you, men will fancy you. But when we came out, as I grew older, it was the opposite. When men find out that I went through the Bondo Society, they sleep with me, they don't want to have anything to do with me anymore because they say, oh, you do not enjoy sex. Sex is painful, and it's also painful for the men because you're just laying there and it does nothing for them. But that's not what they tell us. They tell us that we're preparing you for womanhood, for marriage, and it helps you to be faithful to one man. It was the direct opposite. I was promiscuous because I kept going from one man to the other looking for love. And in the end, what did I get? It just brought on more pain. I was 11. I would never forget that my clitoris was chopped up in half because the woman who did mine was so drunk out of her mind. That's the other thing. They drink and they make sacrifices to their gods. Keep in mind, this is not a religious thing. FGM is not a traditional thing, and it's not a cultural thing. It's a control thing because my father was Catholic, okay, and he allowed his doctors to go through that. She was drunk. My sister passed out twice from bleeding. That's how she almost died. And my stuff was cut in half. Usually when I go to share my story, that's what I talk about. You know, just to make people relax a little bit. There's something there. I don't know what that is. I know it's not keloid. But it inflicts so much harm. Sexually, you hurt for the rest of your life. Psychologically, I'm still not there. And when that woman was talking about their livelihood, making money, I got so furious. I just had a flashback 31 years ago. Now I'm 42. The pain is still there. It's something that never goes away. It never, ever goes away. No matter what you do, it doesn't go away.
It's just painful just to listen to your story. And I don't know. I'm sorry, but I would really wish you all the best in your recovery. And as you said, even though you were 11, you're 42, it's still there. The pain is still there. The experience, just the way you talk about it, it seems like it's really something that happened yesterday. And really, really, we our heart with you. We really wish you all the best in your recovery process. And this leads me to Ms. Peabody. When you talk to women, because you opened two centers, to be able to reach out to women like Frances Cole and others, girls who have been victim of this practice, what do you tell them in terms of, first of all, what is the reaction? Do they respond to coming to the center? Do they open up to you? Because it is to have someone like Ms. Cole share her story, it's really good because it sheds a light on the practice. But not all women will come out and talk about it.
No, Frances is extraordinary, and she is an exception. We have only been able to get a few women to come forward and openly talk about it. I was on News Channel 9 earlier last year, and I brought with me a couple of survivors, like we brought Frances today, and one of the young ladies, it was done to her, her at 4 years old, and she refused for her face to be shown. They had to show her the back of her head, and I told her I'm still working on her and encouraging her to let her know that it's not your fault. That's what we tell them. It's not your fault. You don't have anything to be ashamed of. Frances is not ashamed. She mentioned it a few minutes ago. She's not ashamed to share her story, and we need more women like Frances to come forward, and we tell them it's your parents' fault, or it's the fault of the person who allowed you to be cut and mutilated, not you. So don't be ashamed, don't be embarrassed to go to doctors. That's why we are building a network of OBGYNs, so that we will be able to send these women to specific OBGYNs for their post-FGM care, because not every OBGYN understands or has even been exposed to post-FGM patients. Mm-hmm. So it's important for them to know that we are going to protect them, and we are going to make sure they get their checkups properly and be respected when they go to get their checkups, and not be treated like they are some diseased person, because people get afraid. Doctors react differently toward them when they prop them and put them up in the stirrups. I've heard really bad reaction from patients who tell me that the one doctor paraded all of his interns to the room to glare at her, and she felt like she was being violated all over again. So that's why we decided to do this, to protect these women, because they have been through so much. And as Frances said, she's 42 now. From 11 years old, it stays with them all their lives.
After 31 years, it's still there, and and it's really terrible. I have to say, ladies, we are going to take a short break, and we will continue our discussion. So stick with us, please. And here is now the news with Sanusi Diallo. Sanusi, hello.
Hello, Lenore. Hello, all the listeners. The World Health Organization announced recently that large-scale trials of Zika virus vaccine are at least 18 months away. The agency says it is proceeding very quickly on a vaccine, with some 15 group or companies involved in the research. After initial safety trial, determining the vaccine effectiveness will be the next step. WHO also believe it could confirm suspect link between the virus and two neurological conditions within a few weeks. The UN's health body has warned that African governments should be on the alert for the possible spread of the virus. The WHO has declared a global emergency over the spread of the Zika virus, which has been linked to a rapid increase in birth defects, particularly in South America. However, the UN agency did not impose travel restrictions as one of the preventive measures. The WHO meeting of independent experts was called in response to the spike in babies born in Brazil with a neurodevelopmental disorder known as microcephaly, since the virus was first found there in May last year. And that's a wrap up for your latest health news. Back to you, Lenore.
Welcome back. If you're listening to Health Chat, we are discussing female genital mutilation, cutting, as some others say, and circumcision, as some others say. And ladies, we have questions. One of our listeners is Aliu in Sierra Leone, is asking, what role can men play in fighting FGM, because very often men don't even know that women are being taken away to go through this ritual. So we would like to answer this question.
Well, I'll take the lead, and then Frances can jump in. But that's one of the things. When I recently spoke in Minnesota, there were a lot of men in the room. Usually when I speak, I'm speaking to a room full of women, but there were a lot of men in the room, including physicians. And I made a special call out to men and asked them to join in the discussion, join the conversation, help us. So because the women are of the impression that they are doing it because they want to please the men, because the girl is not marriageable if she's not cut, which is untrue, because a lot of men don't, as Francis said, don't want women who have been cut, because there's no sensation, there's no reaction or response when they're making love. So I call out for the men to definitely join the conversation and to start talking about it. They are left out of it, and the women take the lead. But I think if the men speak out and start saying, we prefer our women with their clitoris intact. We don't want a woman who has undergone FGM. I think that they will stop this. The women will, and the girls will no longer want it, because some girls think, oh, yes, I want it because it's going to make me a woman, a better woman, and I will be marriageable. And they will know that that is not true. Those are only myths. So if the men speak up, it will help us a lot in our campaign.
Ms. Cole, we have a question from Aisha in Liberia. She wants to know, she says, how has FGM affected your social and professional life? And how is your relationship with your stepmother?
FGM really has not affected my social and professional life. I work for the Patent and Trademark Office in Virginia, and they actually just did an employee profile on me where I talked about female genital mutilation. They have about 12,000 employees, and I got a lot of women and men who reach out to me saying, you're very brave for putting your business out there. Mm-hmm. So that has not affected my professional or social in any negative way. If anything, it's actually boosted my self-confidence, you know, because now I know that not having a clitoris really does not make me the woman that I was supposed to be. It all boils down to the person I see myself as through the eyes of God. And secondly, my stepmother and I, you know, African stepmothers, that's another book. we, as you know, just hello. She lives here in Maryland as well, but she and I blame all of them. I blame my mom. I blame my father. He's no longer here. And I blame my stepmom. Because when I went home in 2009, I spoke with my older sister. She said my father actually consulted our mom, and our mom, because she was angry due to the divorce, she said she didn't care. And if she had stepped up to say, you know what, I didn't go through this, it's not going to happen to my daughters, it would not have happened. But then again, I just thank God that I went through this, because even though they tell us that if you talk about it, you die, that's why most women are ashamed to come up, are afraid. Not that they're ashamed, they're afraid to come up and talk because they don't want to be ostracized by their communities and they don't want to die. I used to be a rebellious kid. You tell me not to do something, I do. And now I'm a disruptor, and I'm here to disrupt the entire female genital mutilation system in Africa and around the world, because I will continue to speak and share my story until every girl child lives a fearless life and the life that's meant for a child to live.
And Ms. Baybabdi, and this show is very, you know, some people will find it graphic and we apologize for this, but this is something we have to talk about. There are different types of FGM, and Ms. Cole spoke about the removal of the clitoris in her case, but there are other types as well. And I've met people who told me, you know what, in our culture, it's just the tip that is cut, it's just symbolic, it's not harmful, it's the other way that they do it in other places that is difficult, that is more harmful, the infibulation and everything. So people are trying to really justify and explain, you know, that there are different types and some of them are not so bad and everything. How do you respond to that? Please enlighten us as to the different types, and how do you respond?
There is no justification for any type. There are four different types of FGM, and there is no justification for any of them. I don't want to simplify any type, because I think all types are wrong, but They are the traditional, they call it the traditional Osuna circumcision, which is the removal of the retractable skin and the clitoris. And that's I believe that that's what happened to Francis. And then there is the clitoridectomy, which is the removal of the entire clitoris and the adjacent labia. The infibulation type is what people refer to as the gravest type. To me, for me, all of them are grave, but the infibulation is the most popular in the Eastern countries, Eastern African countries, and some West African countries. It's the removal of the they do the clitoridectomy, which is the removal of the entire clitoris and the adjacent labia, and then the removal of the labia minora and the labia majora, and whatever skin is left, they pull it together and stitch it up, leaving a tiny opening to accommodate urination and later menstruation. I have had women tell me who have undergone infibulation type that it takes them 30 minutes to have one urination, and it comes with a lot of pain and discomfort for each urination. For each menstrual period, you're constantly in lower abdominal pain. And Frances mentioned that she goes through pain. She still is going through physical pain. So I don't simplify any of the types. All of them are grave. All of them are grave.
We heard about the reconstructive surgery. Francis, is this something that you've done, considered, or how available is it here in the US?
I'm actually happy, Heather, because thank God for connecting me with Miss Angela. She introduced me to one of the doctors, Dr. Mercy Lee Bowers. She is just an awesome, awesome, awesome woman. I got to interview her, and we both spoke at the Global Woman Second Walk to End FGM in November. Before I met her, Nadine Gary from Clitorid actually contacted me because I think they heard about me. I have a foundation, a platform where I interview survivors of female genital mutilation, but I've been running into walls because nobody want to talk about it. So they reached out to me if I want to do it. I'm like, my hoo-ha has been through so much pain. I don't think I can bring any more pain to that girl. I've had abortions. I've slept with men for money. I've been raped. I'm like, you know what? She's on break right now. So, it's something that came up. And when I talked to Dr. Bowers, she let me understand what it is that the clitoris is not really, all of it is not really removed. It's larger than we think. Okay. And all they will do is the scar tissue will be clear, will be removed, and then they'll pull it out. But that pain is not something I'm ready for right now.
Okay, Miss Peabody, Miss, thank you so much for joining us. Quickly, to reach us, the show is at the end. What do we do to reach you? Very quickly.
Our website is Global Woman Peace Foundation. .org, globalwomanpeacefoundation.org, all run together. And we have the walk in October. And, you know, please just continue to check our website.
Okay. And Francisco, thank you so much. We really encourage you. You are a very courageous, brave woman. And we wish you all the best. Ladies, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks to our listeners who joined us from all across Africa. I'm your host, Lino Mudu, in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.